There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Before we start today's podcast, a quick heads up on Sheerluxe's VIP Club. From restaurants, bars and hotels to beauty, wellness and shopping, Sheerluxe partners with some of London's best destinations and hottest brands to bring its VIPs exclusive monthly offers. So why not sign up? It'll cost you just £5 a month or £50 for the year. Use your card once or twice and you'll have made that amount back in no time. For more information, visit sheerluxevip.com. Welcome to the Sheerluxe Highlights podcast with me, Charlotte Collins. This week, I'm joined by Heather Steele, Lou Huff, and Becky Hull. Hi, everyone.
Hello. Hi.
What has everybody been watching this week?
I have just started watching Friends from College. Yay. Under your recommendation, Charlotte, and I really like it.
It's good,
sometimes,
right?
Sometimes it goes a little bit too high school and you're too old to be acting like that. One of the main guys who's having the affair, He irritates me sometimes.
FYI, not a spoiler alert.
Yeah, but I'm enjoying it.
Even actually in the second series, it veers even more into kind of slightly silly territory. Yeah. Like quite extreme characters. Yeah. But it's really good.
It's nice to actually have a series that's only half an hour. Sometimes you just want to dip in and out of something And it's perfect for that.
Completely agree. Becky?
I've been watching, this is a bit rogue, League of Their Own. They do this one where they go on tour, so I've been watching the new League of Their Own on tour, and it's now just Freddie Flintoff and Jamie Redknapp. I mean, this is rogue, but it's so funny, and like, they have Anthony Joshua on it, so if you're a fan.
I love him.
And they just do loads of different challenges all the time, like Jerry Horn is in it. It's just a good laugh, especially in winter when you're just feeling a bit naff, and I'm constantly watching like serial killer things, so I think I just need to take the pressure off.
That is such a good point. I also have a recommendation that isn't people dying, and it's so refreshing.
Yeah,
it's
so nice. Refreshing.
I always like have it on in the background because I agree it's really funny. And their first ever road trip when they were in the States is like one of the most laugh out loud pieces of television.
I literally cry with laughter. Yeah. And Alan Carr is in this one.
He's
in
the first. I love Alan Carr.
Honestly, I was physically crying with laughter.
Have you seen the episode where they join Cirque du Soleil?
Yes.
On their road trip, and like James Corden's doing all these like sets. You're right. It is crying. It's on Sky One, and it's if you do have Sky, it's a sports panel show hosted by James Corden, and they've got two team leaders which were for a long time Freddie Flintoff and Jack Whitehall, but is now Ramesh Ranganathan,
yes,
having replaced
Jack Whitehall.
Yeah,
but they're not sporty.
No, but then the people on the panels are right, sportsmen, yeah, and it's really funny.
It's so funny. I highly recommend it if you can.
You don't have to be into sports either.
No, I mean, I am like the least sporty person. I have not lifted a finger in months, but it just cracks me up, honestly.
But good to watch with a boy who is into sports.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, like, wider family.
Yeah.
Heather, what about you?
Has anyone else been watching Shipwrecked? Anybody?
No.
No. Back in 2002, I think I was.
Yeah, so I think the original one, I was really shocked, started in 1999.
What?
Which I was what?
Whoa.
For anyone who might not know or remember, it was kind of like Love Island before Love Island existed. It was a bit like Survivor, but with kind of young, hot people. Mm. So basically, yeah, there are two rival teams on two different islands, and every week new arrivals come, and each island has to try and win them over. And then at the end, whoever has the most people on the island win a load of money.
But I heard so many stories about this, like there was actually hotels on the island.
I'm absolutely convinced there were.
And everyone was shacking up together, including like the producers and the cameramen.
God, really?
I heard they had like barrels and barrels of condoms on those islands.
Oh, yeah. I did not know any of that. Anyway, I decided to just give it a go, just to fill the Love Island void.
So they brought it back after what, like
15
years?
They brought it back, after a long time. It used to be on a Sunday morning on T4, back when that existed.
Okay. Oh, love
and,
T4.
And is it more like Bear Grylls the Island, or is it more Love
Absolutely
Island?
Absolutely not. It's more Love Island. Okay. They've already got like everything made for them, whereas I seem to remember before they had to make their own, you know, hut. And that was half the thing to attract new islanders. It was like, oh, well, we've got better accommodation, or we've built a hot tub, or, you know, something ridiculous like that. Basically, it's not very good, so...
And why? Just because
I don't know.
Are we just over the formula now?
I think it is very much the same. And maybe because I'm a lot older now, I'm just finding the people who are on there highly irritating.
I often think you can't go back to something, like, let something be great and then let it finish.
Yeah,
and move on to something else.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Didn't they try to bring back Blind Date recently?
I didn't see any of that. But it was Paul O'Grady as well, who I love, but it's not Scylla.
No, it's not Scylla.
Yeah. So, yeah, if anyone is watching Shipwrecked still, I doubt anyone is. Because, again, it's on every weekday night at 9. Whereas it used to just be on once.
On T4 on Sundays.
Yeah.
And also, like, 9 till 10 is not that late in summer. But actually in winter, like, no, I'm winding down at that point. I can't give up 9 till 10 because that's, like, the 1 hour I have before bed.
Yeah. So true.
How much longer is it on for?
Oh, God, I don't know. I watched the first 3 episodes and that's it. I also watched something else really bad. But this is when I was at my sister's. I worked from home on Wednesday and she's had a baby. So I was there, kind of, we didn't want anything too distracting on because I was working and there was a baby.
But I watched telly.
It was just on in the background. And this is why it was so good to have on the background because it was so shite. It was called Instant Hotel. And it's basically like 4 in a bed, but set in Australia, where they each B&B owner, basically, they come together 4 or 5 different teams and travel around going to each one and rating it accordingly.
That is a classic daytime TV
show. It sounds like it definitely has all the tropes of that, but loads of people are talking about it. It's on Netflix, isn't
it? Yes, so yes,
and
people, just come on Netflix.
It was on this ST Style barometer of like things that are cool as something that you should be checking out that people are really into, and I've had a few friends mention it. So I'm confused where it's got this kind of cult status from, though, because it does sound pretty daytime TV.
It sounds so daytime.
Anyway, don't watch that.
Why was it rubbish?
I don't know. It was just really one of those like really formulaic programs, and the people, some of them were absolutely awful. There were too many episodes and you kept seeing the same awful people. So, not for me. Okay. But on a plus, for anyone who didn't see it the first time around, the assassination of Gianni Versace is launched on Netflix.
So if anyone didn't see it before...
Right. Highly recommend it.
Did you love it, Becky?
I absolutely loved it. He fully deserved the awards he got. I mean, he was disturbing, Darren Criss, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That Phil Collins scene. I don't know who has seen it, but like, petrifying.
Yeah. I gave up, but I give up on a lot of TV. I feel like I should go back.
I can see why you gave up.
I watched the first one and you know why? Because the murder happened in the first one and I kind of knew what happened to him. I knew that he was eventually caught, so I was like, well, I need to kind of watch this play out.
And
but
then,
maybe I'm wrong.
I think probably episode 3 it then goes back to lots of other murders he committed before. So I suppose like, it might pick up interest again there.
I can't deal with all the murder stuff. I really just, I can do like one at a time, but after You and even Fire Island, like I find all these things quite distressing. Mm. So I started watching Grace and Frankie, which everybody talks about.
Oh my God, my mum is obsessed with Grace.
I like kind of background show, and this is perfect because obviously it's like, you know, there's 5 seasons, so there's loads to get through, but I don't think you need to watch it that intently. It's got way more heart and soul than I thought it did. So it's basically about 2 women in their 60s or 70s who find out, again, not a spoiler, in the pilot that their husbands, who are long-term business partners, are gay and are leaving both of their wives for each other. And they hate each other. Like, one is, like, this super glamorous. She's Jane Fonda. Like, so a super glamorous was entrepreneur who is very polished and kind of Park Avenue. And then the other one is Lily Tomlin, who plays this, you know, really hippie, weed-smoking, grey-haired, kind of liberal. And, yeah, so it starts with them really not getting on at all. But then they shared a property as the 2 couples, which they both end up wanting to live in. So, obviously, it becomes about the 2 of them and their relationship. But the men feature really heavily in it as well. One of the husbands is played by Martin Sheen. For fans of The West Wing, I know he's obviously in a lot, but, like, one of his most iconic roles is in The West Wing, and it's, like, a complete departure for him. And it's just really sweet and fun and really refreshing to see something about older people, and it's lovely. It's laugh out loud, and there's quite a lot of sadness, particularly I think at the beginning. I suspect that probably dissipates a bit as you move away from the initial divorce shock, but it's really lovely.
I think it's really funny and I also think it's really good to see a drama at that age going through something like that as well. Like it's a much more modern way of looking at it.
Definitely.
Which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Is it on Netflix?
It's on Netflix. All 5 seasons. It's a Netflix original. And it's actually written by, or at least created by, Marta Kaufman, who is one of the people behind Friends, obviously. So, yeah, quite a good pedigree. So I think if you want something to kind of replace your Gilmore Girls and something a bit more lighthearted, then I recommend it. Oh, one more thing I have to mention is Dolly Alderton's Love Stories podcast. Have you listened to this?
No.
Okay, so she's done a new one. So she has a podcast, not just the High Low, but Love Stories, which is her own podcast. It's almost like Desert Island Discs about love. So, you know, greatest loves of your life and most passionate, and, you know, all those kind of things. And she kicked off season 2 with Stanley Tucci, who...
Oh, obsessed.
Yeah. cannot tell you. This podcast was made for you.
Oh my God.
So write it down.
I've seen everyone tweeting.
Everyone is talking about it. And I'm like, I really hate it when people kind of jump on the bandwagon and like Insta story a podcast, because it's like, yeah, I know everyone's talking about it. But it is epic. First of all, I hadn't realised that he was a widower and that he lost his first wife a number of years ago. And so he has 3 teenage children when she passed away. And he is now, of course, married to Emily Blunt's sister.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Which is the best bit of trivia. Yeah. They met after The Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, which is the best film of all time. Yeah.
The best film ever. It's just amazing. He has an Italian upbringing, so spends a really large portion of the podcast talking about pasta, which... Oh,
brilliant.
Great. loads of great pasta recommendations. And then all the love stuff is so touching. He speaks so honestly, and she asks him really poignant and kind of raw questions, and he answers with like real sincerity and thought and honesty, and it's just really moving really touching. And yeah, everybody should listen to it, whether you kind of know much about him or not.
And what makes it so different from the first season? Is it that he is so fantastic, or is it that it's a completely different sort of style?
No, it's him. It's him. I assume they discussed before, like, can I ask you about this and can I ask you about that? He talks about when they went to see Mary Poppins and he took his youngest son, and how like the beginning scene of, you know, Emily Blunt's whole family, they arrange like a whole big screening, he's there with his new wife. One of the second songs in Mary, like very early on in that film, is a widower like crying over the loss of his wife, and like, and he talks about exactly how that feels. He's just really honest about all of it, and it's really amazing. So yeah, I really recommend it.
I'd definitely be downloading that.
Okay, we're going to talk a bit about horoscopes now. We do a monthly forecast with astrologer Fiona Graham, but I don't think we've ever actually talked about horoscopes on the podcast before.
I certainly haven't.
No, I haven't either. So it is the beginning of Feb, so I thought we could maybe have a look at what's in the stars for us this month. Becky, what are you?
So I'm born on the 21st of June, but it's completely on the cusp between Gemini and Cancer.
Okay, so and do you actually pick which one you prefer?
Yeah, I mean, everyone hates a Gemini. They literally hate Gemini, so I'm always like, oh, I'm Cancer.
Which I don't think you're a Gemini.
I think I'm a Cancer. Yeah, definitely a Cancer.
You strike me as like got one lovely personality and that's it.
No, thanks guys. So I would say I'm on the cusp, but I would definitely say I associate more with Cancer.
What are the character traits of, I know this is quite a hard question because I'm never quite sure, but do you know what the character traits are for a Cancer?
I think Cancers, they're quite calm, they're quite homebred, they're very loyal and just quite relaxed, whereas then Geminis are on the opposite end of the spectrum and they're just completely like, give me all the attention in the world, which actually I do hate. I mean, I'm just not great with that.
My mum's a Gemini and she's not like that at all.
I know, I mean, it's funny, isn't it?
I thought Gemini was that you'd have two kind of really opposing personalities.
And you're quite chatty. I'd say I'm a mix of the two, but I would serve
it. You sound quite Cancerian.
Yeah, I'm Cancerian. And so mine says that I am going to have an unplanned change of direction.
I'm not leaving as I hope.
I mean, I've only just joined. But yeah, so that's interesting. And then it says, it does actually say from the 20th, look out for other people's poor management, as this could affect your own business. That's a bit bleak. But it also says that there's going to be a lot of fun this month. So I think it's balanced. There's some goods and bads. And apparently I could become a romantic adventurer.
Oh, wow.
Full of highs and lows.
It sounds like you're going to have quite a busy month.
Yeah, I'm going to have a busy Feb.
Do you listen to horoscopes?
No, not really. And I also always, I'm a bit sceptical about horoscopes. I sort of think there's always something in it that makes you relate to it, you know what I mean?
Okay, so does anything in there ring true?
Actually, no, not in this one, but that's me.
Lou,
for the month.
Believe in horoscopes?
Yeah, I think I'm actually pretty similar to you, Becky. I think often you'll read ahead and obviously those things haven't happened yet, and I think probably if you read back after the month you'd be like, okay, well yeah, that happened and maybe that was that, but I think it would probably be the same if you read it for every single horoscope.
I agree.
So I don't know, I'm a bit sceptical with these types of things really. So mine is apparently that I've got off the wall ideas delivering stunning results as early as the 7th, and I'm firing all cylinders, but I also need to be worried about overstretching myself financially and be careful with my time. I don't know.
What are you, Lee?
I'm a Capricorn.
Okay, and would you say you are a Capricorn?
I don't know. I find it really interesting when people say to me, oh, you're a Capricorn, and I'm like, and? I don't know. If someone would like to tell me what that means, I'll tell you.
I don't know if you know what it means, but I've got a few Capricorn friends. You're not really like them.
Okay.
And they're not really like each other, you know.
I don't know.
No. Heather, take anything from it ever?
I always read them, but yeah, I do take it all with a very large pinch of salt, but I still, for whatever reason, enjoy being like, right, let's see what this month has in store. I don't know why, but yeah. Me and Becca were talking about these the other day, actually, because I always thought before I started working on sort of women's mags that they were just written by someone in the editorial team, kind of like, right, what are we going to put this month? So I was pleasantly surprised that actually we do talk to somebody who's in the biz, and it isn't just a kind of a phony thing, which I always assumed it was.
No, we have got we didn't make up an astrologer, did we?
No, we did not. But yeah, I'm a Pisces.
Me too. When's your birthday, Heather?
The 11th of March.
Okay.
When's yours?
25th of Feb.
Apparently we're both on stunning form.
Yes. Some words, eh? There's actually the word dazzle in it as well.
Apparently, though, from the 7th, it's especially easy to misinterpret confusing signals, which I believe the 7th
is... my off-the-wall idea.
We're going to get confused completely.
Well, the thing I find difficult about horoscopes is that I never know which bit is supposed to apply to what area of my life. So, for example, in mine, it says, the time has come to reap the benefits of the fact that I'm on stunning form and to make sure that what you ask for is what you really want. Is that at work? Is that in my personal life? My romantic life? The gym? Like, what area of my life is that supposed to cover?
But I think that's for you to then interpret it the way you want it to be. Like, if you were suddenly like, oh, that means work, then that's what I focus on. Yeah. So I think it's meant to be ambiguous like that, so that, you know, you direct yourself in a certain way anyway.
Yeah. Does anyone else ever read their other halves as well to see how they match up?
I have done that a couple of times.
So apparently, this is my boyfriend's, praise will come your way from an unlikely source, which would renew your confidence and your sex appeal. I'm like, hang on.
Harry says someone's going to make him feel really special long before the hallowed 14th. So be prepared to appreciate this for what it is.
There's an opportunity for you.
Yeah.
Mine is the same as Ben's. There was something about our love life. Yes, a breakthrough in love is almost certainly on the way. Be ready for it.
Well, at least you'll have a breakthrough together. Yeah. Maybe it's that we're getting praise from a likely sport.
Maybe our breakthrough is that we're shit together.
My boyfriend says various elements demand that you keep a close eye on shared cash arrangements. And mine is about
money.
Well, that is very consistent with yours. So I think there might be more in it than we thought there was.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Let's talk about fitness now. We wrote a piece about the best new fitness classes to try in 2019, from a new Barry's Bootcamp opening to the workout that Rosie Huntington-Whiteley swears by. Has anyone tried any of the classes on this list?
So I was actually going to go to the Body by Simone class last week, because anything that promises me I will look anything like Rosie Huntington-Whiteley, I will be there. But unfortunately, I couldn't make it. So I'm going to definitely try and go, because that is like my absolute dream.
And hers is a mix of what, like dance?
Yeah, dance. It's a sort of repetition workout, and I think just like a bit of fun but a bit of movement, sort of strengthening every part of your body, really.
That sounds good. A mixture, I think, is the key to getting through a class.
Becky, fan of a faddy class, or are you a gym girl?
Yeah, so I wrote this one, and actually I am much more into classes because I just wouldn't go to the gym. So I'm so bad at finding the time, but classes, I feel like you're forced to do it. And the one that sticks out to me on this was the 10 stretch, because it's not, I mean, classic me, because it's not actual exercise. But it's literally designed to stretch you out and take care of weary muscles. So it's like a 30-minute class, I think, where you just completely... I mean, it's like relaxation. But they focus on movements to kind of take out all your knots, which is what I really need. And I just think it would be quite therapeutic.
Is there like a yoga or Pilates angle to it, or is it...
It's Pilates, yeah. It's like a Pilates angle, but the design of it is to just completely align you.
Yeah.
It's meant to give you effects of a deep tissue massage, so I think it would be really... I'd love to try it. I'm desperate to go.
Yeah, that does sound good, that one.
Yeah. I love that. Well, it's not cheap. It's £30 a class.
Yeah.
I guess that's like...
What you pay for a massage.
A massage, yeah.
They say that it's good for your health, so... Wow. I mean, that would be the excuse I'd use for 30 quid, but yeah.
I think that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
What other classes do you like in London?
I did one with Shona Virtue once in London, who is incredible. I mean, I think also the thing with Shona Virtue is you want to look like Shona Virtue. Mm-hmm. So her classes are just so good and they're intense. If you don't know who she is, she's kind of, she fuses like Pilates with really high intense workouts, circuit training. Trains David Beckham and she's just amazing. She's like a little pocket rocket. She's amazing.
And her classes were really hard.
Really hard. You just have to go for it. And it's usually 50 minutes, but you really get something from it. They're amazing.
Yeah, I bet. Heather, are you into gym classes?
No, no. I hate anything that's kind of a group exercise when it comes to exercise.
You'd rather
anyway.
Torture yourself by food, isn't it?
Yeah, I do like going to the gym. I like doing that. I do sometimes go to a yoga class a couple of times a month. But yeah, again, I just hide at the back and do my thing. But yeah, no, anything that's too kind of intense. Basically, if anything, if I'm going to make a real tit out of myself in front of people, I just try to avoid. Whereas at the gym, you can kind of just do your own thing and hide away.
Well, that's why I like Cobox, because it's really dark, like really yes. dark. But there's a new one on this list called HIS, or H-I-I-S.
Yes.
Which is high intensity interval skipping.
Yeah.
So I was pretty fit about 2 years ago, not so much anymore, but skipping was like my thing. And I used to do like half an hour of skipping every day.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah, and it is hard. Yeah. But it's so good for you. So this is a new class. It's 60 minutes, which is a pretty long time. I think it sounds like the kind of Cobox Barry's format.
Yeah.
Where it's a mix of HIIT and skipping.
Yeah, so you get to do a bit of burpees and all sorts. So I think it is literally...
God, I'm tired just thinking
yeah,
about that.
I know. Just thinking about it makes you want to have a sit down, but it's reportedly loved by people like Gigi Hadid, and so again, anything that can get me a little bit closer to her.
I'm gonna try that one.
Supermodel standards on this table.
Yeah. Yeah, aiming high. Well, if you are interested in trying out some new classes, there's a few on this list. Barry's is just open in Canary Wharf.
Yes.
So if that is your thing, then something a little more east for you. And DW Fitness First by Reebok Dance Workout Series. That's a mouthful. That also yeah. sounds pretty fun though, doesn't it? And Block London, which is growing all the time.
Loads of people were talking to me about it, so I thought let's definitely put that in because it sounds really interesting.
Well, they've got 160 classes a week to choose from, so it sounds like it's worth checking out.
Yeah, something for absolutely everyone there.
Let's talk about improving your decision making now. Some make knee-jerk decisions whilst others tend to sweat the small stuff. So if you're in the latter camp, we ask the experts how you can become more efficient in your decision making. Heather, good at making decisions?
No, I'm very much in the other camp. I do like to ruminate and stress, I'd say, over any decisions, really. Not even, you know, the big ones, but I like to be sure I'm making the right decision. I do feel like I also have a very good gut instinct as well. So I think sometimes it's kind of trusting that and just going with it. I'm trying to do that a lot more.
And have you found that in the past, your gut has been right?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, completely. But I have to kind of talk myself out of getting too stressed and anxious about even like really insignificant decisions. I still do kind of really have to stop myself from my mind just wandering and trying to, you know, land on the best option.
Blue, what about you?
Yeah, I'm really the same. I'm terrible at making decisions and I can really get myself into a flurry about it.
Yeah.
I tend to find with the bigger decisions, I'm more led by my gut. I think you do kind of know. But for me, it's more those like middle ground insignificant mm-hmm. things where there really isn't a right or wrong. I really don't have a gut reaction and I get myself so worried about them. I don't know why.
I'd say, yeah, I'm the same.
And it's
yeah.
ridiculous. So, you know, really boring things like if we're booking a holiday, what day should we be flying? What airline? How much should we be spending on X to Y, and like those things like that where I can get myself in such a pickle.
And have you found ways of managing that over the years?
It kind of, I think, goes in waves at different stages. I'm probably better at it or more affected by it than others, but I wouldn't say I've sort of found a good coping mechanism. I think it's just sort of having a sort of stern word with yourself and be like, stop being ridiculous, make a decision, and then It's also like nothing's ever bad has come from making a wrong decision. I think the more you sort of get your head around that, then it's better.
So for this feature, we spoke to a clinical hypnotherapist, Fiona Lamb, and also a counsellor, Lorna Cordwell. And they explained that it is that fear of making the wrong decision that is what gives us that anxiety. It's the total fear. And one of our contributors said, never before in the history of mankind have we been more aware of other people. The online world, the compare and despair aspect of seeing how others lead their lives, the feeling that we lack something. All of these things can make even the strongest and most decisive person fear making a decision. We all feel like we're under the microscope and everyone can judge us. Do you think that those are factors that make it a bit worse, Becky?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And actually, in the beauty industry specifically, as journalists, everybody knows everything. So I think you're always very aware of people knowing what you're doing, and then you sort of tend to panic about what they think. And I am awful for that. I'm such a what if person, and I do hope I grow out of it, because I've noticed here they've said let go of the what ifs, and I do need to do that, because otherwise you'll just drive yourself insane. And Harry once said to me that whatever decision you make at the time is the right decision, because it's the right decision in that moment. Yeah. But I still haven't got my head around
and
that.
And I think sometimes if you have made a different decision, and maybe consequently you wish you had done something else, you do learn something from it. So you'll be like, okay, next time I do that, I'll now know not to do this. I should have done that. So you get something from it. So it may not have been the experience you thought you had, but you do get something else. So I think often you just need to remind yourself that there will be an outcome to whatever happens, and it's really not the end of the world.
Yeah.
Do you think having the self-awareness, knowing that you're somebody who finds it stressful making decisions, do you think that helps at all? Like, personally, I know I just kind of get caught up in this web of, okay, well, I know I'm struggling with this because of this. Okay, but then what if the reason I'm getting really stressed is because I'm like, you know, it becomes this kind of vicious cycle in your head. In a way, it's better not to have that self-awareness.
I'd agree, yeah. You're always preparing yourself for the negative kind of questions.
Yeah.
So you answer them straight away.
I don't know if it's a female thing as well, but I feel like my girlfriends and I are more susceptible to this type of thing than the men in my life. I don't know if you feel the same.
Yeah. I agree.
I think we're also quite bad at asking, I mean, this is a bit generalising, but I am so bad at asking other people's opinions. So I'm always like, oh, what do you think? What do you think? And then that just makes me go even more insane.
And it's like you really have to be careful not to do that, because then, well, I'd actually say sometimes it can make you realise what you do think. You're like, actually, I didn't really want you to say that. I think this one clearly. Or you can get so caught up in what other people think that you're then, that's more important. And it should really be what you want to do, not what anyone else is doing.
That's so true.
So in this piece, Fiona gave us some pieces of advice for making more balanced, rational decisions. So they included slowing down, so not making decisions when you have a heightened emotion. I think that is so good. And you learn that as well, don't you? It's so easy to kind of make a decision or make a react to something in a certain way. And you need to go away. And
Often just sleeping on something can really make a difference.
Yeah. Definitely. Don't live in the past. She says it can be difficult to make decisions based on facts if we have bad experience in the past. It's important to remember that this is a totally new situation and set of circumstances. That is so true. If it's something like an issue with your boss, that boss is not the same as a boss in the past, you know, something like that. Let go of the what ifs, Becky. Embrace change. The only constant in life is change, and we have to get comfortable being uncomfortable. That is something that I massively struggle with. I'm not good with change, and just being okay with not being in control and being uncomfortable is not does not sit very well with me. And stop putting pressure on yourself to get it right. Remember, there are no mistakes, only lessons. When you give yourself permission to fail and are not too hard on yourself, choices feel a lot easier. Nobody gets it right all the time, and that's okay. I think that's quite encouraging.
Yeah,
I'd say so.
Yeah, definitely. Okay.
Good. Going makeup-free to work, parties and big events sounds both intimidating and liberating, but nobody would know better than you, Becky, because you did it for 10 whole days. Is that right?
10 days. Yeah, 10 days.
Tell us about it.
I mean, this was just a weird experiment I set myself not that long ago, because I was just so fed up of wearing makeup every day.
And
I think I had a conversation with someone in my old job, and we were saying how there's something about not wearing makeup when you can connect with people on a different level, which sounds really deep. This wasn't literally the reason for it. But I was just a bit, I felt like there was so much going on, and I've put in here that, you know, there was the whole no makeup selfie, and then came like Jennifer Aniston Kristen being in Cake and she had no makeup on and all these big actresses were taken to the screen with nothing on. And then I was also always seeing models with nothing on their faces runway after runway. And then loads of people were like, can you ever do that? Is that a thing? And I was like, well, I don't know, but I can give it a try. And I did, because I just thought, well, I would quite like to look like one of the models on the runway. And I was like, yeah, it'd be really easy. And then obviously I tried and it really was not easy because I don't look like a supermodel.
But that aside, what were the biggest takeaways from it?
Yeah, so I did it because I just wanted to feel a bit freer. I've spoken about before how I've had acne and I just constantly felt like I was loading my skin with a load of stuff that didn't need. And I just wanted to take a break from it, just for my own reasons. So I did, and what I learned was that I'm basically not someone who's going to wear foundation every day, which was the biggest thing, because I'm not someone who wears loads. I don't cake it on, but I was wearing foundation every single day, which I don't think helped my skin. And you just learn little hacks. I mean, I'm not a makeup teetotaler. I never will be. It was really bloody hard, especially going without mascara because I look like a little boy. But I think I just learned that there's ways of paring back. You know, you don't need a whole face every day. You can take care of your skin.
But you did go teetotal for those 10 days.
I did do teetotal for the 10 days just to give it a break. And even things like giving my lashes a break, and you do really notice a difference when you put mascara back on. They are much fuller. But I spoke to several makeup artists, and I don't know if you know Terry de Gunsberg. She's behind By Terry, the makeup brand. Ooh. I mean, she was like, makeup free is bloody hard. Like, she said models can do it because, you know, they are models, but it's quite a raw look. So she said the one thing to do is just to pare back your makeup and just go with concealer or just things that make you feel good but don't cover your whole face. I think that was what I wanted to gain from it. I wanted to learn how to pare back.
So did you used to wear much more makeup than you do now? Now it looks like you've just got mascara on.
Yeah. But yeah, well, exactly. And I did. I used to have foundation. And when I say a lot, it was just a full face. It wasn't like, I didn't go to work with like extensions and my eyes, lashes. It was just, I would, you know, properly make an effort with foundation and all the steps. Mm. Whereas I think it's just quite refreshing to take a step back. Yeah. And also there's something quite nice about then people seeing you with a full face of makeup.
Yeah. I really notice that on people who don't most of the time.
And then when you do. I know. And I think that was part of it as well. I just think there were so many different reasons. But what I took away from it was you can pare back and still look like you're wearing something without going OTT.
And did you feel not embarrassed, but sort of less attractive or more
God.
Shy?
When
you were, more self-conscious.
100%. Oh, it was awful. I mean, I had my brother, one of them was like, oh, this means your eyelashes won't look so clumpy anymore. And I was like, right, a bit hard. But also not just that. Yeah, going to work was really hard because you're just completely like, you feel like everybody's staring at you. Everyone tells you you look tired. And you do. I think that was actually the hardest bit was my eye area, not the face. It's your eyes. Mm. But yeah, everyone told me I looked tired. I was really self-conscious going to work events or just going out and like going out with friends. The best bit was going home and having to take my makeup.
Yeah,
so like 2 a.m. But yeah, I could never do it permanently. I mean, I take my hat off to anyone that really enjoys not wearing makeup, but it's hard. It's very hard.
So now you're kind of back on the bandwagon, but doing it less. What are your tips? What are the things? Mascara, concealer, what else?
So one of the biggest ones I learned was to use skincare as your replacement makeup, which was a really nice tip because actually you can even use SPF as a highlighter, which is really nice because some of them have got really pretty sheeny textures.
Yes. Like
La Roche-Posay have some really nice ones. Even Origins, I think, have got some. There's so many SPFs out there that are kind of blurred between skincare and SPF, and they've got subtle sheens. And also finding serums that sheeny, just basically anything with sheeny textures to give your skin a nice glow, and just tapping it along your cheekbones or just in areas that need something.
You could still use a highlighter. Just
Yeah, exactly. And actually, I interviewed Beyonce's makeup artist yesterday, and And he said, there's something really nice now about seeing the rawness of a dark circle, or he was like, it's nice to see a bit of texture in your face. But again, so that's where it comes in with just using a dab of concealer and things like always carrying a plain spoolie brush around with you just to brush up your brows and eyelashes, and also cream blushes. One thing I learned from it was the power of a cream blush, not a powder, a cream, because it's liquidy, again it's sheer, and it just gives you that that warmth that you need when everything else looks like Gollum.
I've always used a cream brush. Yeah, a cream. Yeah. My whole life. And I have to, I swear by the Stila one. In Lilium, I've used it my whole life.
Yeah. And then the final one is finding a mascara that's got like a thinner wand. Just because...
I thought that was a good tip.
Yeah, because I think so many people want to wear mascara, but it can look clumpy. And Pixie have got a really good one. And it, honestly, it just makes you look like you've had a lash tint. So it's not thick clumps, as my brother would say. It's just really subtle definition. It's kind of the look you want when you're on holiday or something like that. You know, it's just really pared back.
And Pixie
really
are super affordable as well,
Pixie's
right?
super affordable. I think it's like 12 quid, that mascara. It's called 188.
The Benefit Roller Lash is another really good one.
Yeah, really thin. Basically thin wands. Mm. Yeah, really nice.
Leo and Heather, I'm looking at you guys. You also don't wear a lot of makeup either.
No, I'm not very good at it. And if I ever go to, I don't know, Selfridges, whatever, and I'm at the makeup hall and they'll like have a go at my face, I just think I look really weird when I've got proper makeup on.
Do you think it's because you're not used to seeing yourself done up?
Probably. And I think my look is maybe just slightly more pared back. But mascara for me is the one I think I look the most different without. And so if I'm on holiday, I'll get like a lash tint before I go because I think that really makes a big difference. But on the weekends, I won't wear makeup. I really like having a break because I think that when you do put something on, you're like, ooh, it's so much better now. I think for women, it's nice that we can sort of change up our look a bit more from, you know, different levels of how much makeup we're wearing.
Exactly.
Heather? Indeed.
Basically, I didn't wear any makeup for about 4 months just before I started working here, and I only started wearing it again because I kind of felt like I should look a little bit more polished. And Rich was there with his camera every day, so I was like, yeah, I think I'll start wearing my eyeliner again. But yeah, it was the same thing because I always wear my kind of heavy liquid eyeliner and mascara. So when I did go into the office the first time again, I for the first few days I did keep getting people giving me kind of second looks or being like, why do you look different? Or even two people were like, oh, you look really different without your glasses on. I don't wear glasses.
They just
couldn't work out why I looked so different. But yeah, once everyone had kind of made, oh, you look tired or are you ill, or those kind of comments and worked out what it was, no one kind of cared, so I didn't care. I just kind of got on with it. So since then, I felt a hell of a lot more confident just not wearing it. So yeah, same as you, Lou, often at the weekend, if I'm not going to go anywhere in particular, I'll just put like some tinted lip balm on or something, do my eyebrows, and that's it. Just kind of leave
it. And I think
it.
If you look after your skin, you maybe don't need quite so much. And I think often people are so set in their routine of what they put on, actually, like, do you need that much?
Which is exactly why I did it. Yeah, I think that is a really good point. And I think it's also about, so many people do like going makeup free on the weekends. It is about converting that the day to day. And it is easier than I thought.
But I also would say, I think if it makes you feel better to be wearing X or Y or whatever, then just do that. Because even, you know, from like wearing a good outfit or a shit outfit, it can really transform the way you feel, the way you think people are interacting with you. So I think just do what works for you, really.
Just do you.
I think that's the case for me. I'm all or nothing. So I'm the same on the weekends. I wear, unless I'm going out on Saturday night, but in the days I wear nothing. But I don't feel ready to leave my house if I haven't put my full face on in the morning. And I don't think I look like I wear like huge amounts of makeup, but I do. I wear foundation and eyeshadow and the full works every day because I don't like that in between on me. I still look, just putting on mascara and lip balm, I still can see, whether other people notice it or not, I don't know, but I still see the red patches and the dark circles. It's exactly as you say. To me, it's like wearing trackies to the office. That it would feel like the equivalent of just not pulling myself together. I think it's probably something you learn from your mum. Like, my mum used to put on her full face every day, whether she was, you know, popping to the supermarket or like going out for a big day. Like, that's just kind of always what she did. So to me, that's just what you do when you get up in the morning. And I certainly wouldn't if I was chilling at home. But, you know, game face on, to me, that means full face of makeup.
Yeah, I do think it's true. I think it's just whatever makes you happy completely. It's just interesting that so many people are looking to move towards it. It's an interesting movement.
Yeah, and God, looking at all of you with your bare faces, it's certainly a bit of inspiration for us all. Let's end by talking about the wedding diaries. Sorry, there won't be many. If you're bored of it, you haven't got long to go because my wedding is creeping around the corner, and this month's wedding diaries was all about the various outfits necessary, because it turns out when you're getting married, married abroad, there's a few events involved. So obviously you want to get married in the UK as well, assuming you're doing even something very small scale, which we are, just a registrar and a lunch. You want something nice to wear to that, and then we're doing a bit of a party to kick off the whole thing. I really quite fancy a dress to change into after party as well.
Why not?
Why not? Exactly.
So how many have you got so far?
I have none.
I have none.
I have the wedding dress. I have the wedding dress. So that's the big one. That's the important one, right? Like, if everything else is a disaster, I've got the dress. But I know I want to wear white to all of these things. That kind of helps narrow it down. I know that I'm only looking for white things. Because actually, it's much harder for, like, my mum, for example, who needs an equal amount of outfits but could wear anything all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really wanted to tell people about the different range of brands there are out there, probably most of which you'll have heard about before, but not necessarily places you would think to look for these events. So, for example, we've got a Jewish thing the week before, which is a tradition in synagogue the week before you get married, and the dress code for that is akin to going to quite a traditional British wedding, I suppose. Right. It's like going to a, you know, a smart lunch for somebody's wedding. Whistles have some really great dresses for that kind of thing. Rixo is perfect for that kind of thing too. Something passionate. That is probably the one I won't wear white to. But also little tips like the civil wedding, you can break with tradition. Emily Ratajkowski obviously wore that incredible mustard yellow Zara suit for her wedding. So again, it doesn't have to be anything hugely expensive or anything white. And then when it comes to the after party, I just want something really sparkly and really sequiny. So if anyone sees anything fun out there.
This is the outfit I'm most excited of Charlotte's. We often will be sending each other basically anything sparkly and short.
And white.
And white. And
white. Like white-ish.
I saw you doing that earlier today.
Oh, yeah. It's a good one, the one I said today.
Really.
But do you guys find it hard to dress for weddings or for the various events around weddings?
I find it quite hard dressing for weddings, especially ones that are sort of in winter. When it's cold, it's like, God, what the hell am I going to wear? And I'm still yet to get myself a really nice power suit.
So I've got a wedding in mid-April, and that could be anything.
Yeah, any type
that
of
could
weather.
Be, it could be like snowing, or it could be baking hot. So it's really hard to prepare for that kind of thing. Lou?
Yeah, I also find it really difficult. I think because the colour palette that I tend to enjoy wearing is basically black, navy, white, cream and grey.
And the rich really let us the evening wear.
None of which work for a wedding unless you're the bride, and I can wear white. So I look forward to that day. But navy and black is difficult sometimes because it can be too overbearing. Don't want to be too dark. So often I'll go down the separates route. So in the summer I had white trousers and a navy top. And I've done that a few times. But now I do find it tricky, actually. I think particularly in the summer when often the dresses are sort of slinky, strappy.
Yeah.
And that is just not a look that I feel comfortable wearing.
No.
So yeah, I find it hard, actually.
I think, yeah, in the summer as well, there is the worry that if you get something new, there might be somebody else wearing it as well. Because I have seen that at a wedding before. And yeah, that's kind of stuck in my brain quite a bit.
I think if that happens, you just got to embrace it.
Yeah, own it completely. Yeah. But yeah, I'm going to a couple this year, so I'm kind of going to start looking now just in case. So that doesn't happen. If I get my outfit early enough, then hopefully.
Yeah. There's also a sort of re-wearing. Like, you've got to think about who was there. Will there be any crossover? If not, then you can definitely wear it.
And also, I feel like that about my own wedding in terms of re-wearing. I don't want to buy five outfits or however many and then just have them sit in my cupboard for the rest of my life. That's such a waste. So apart from the dress itself, I feel like I need to do some careful shopping to find things that are re-wearable.
We did a wardrobe tour last week with a stylist called Gail Rinkoff, and she had her wedding shoes in her shoe cupboard, which she had actually had dyed. And she then said that she'd worn them loads and loads and loads since. So I thought that's such a good idea.
That is a good idea.
That they're not going to go to waste.
So again, some of my tips in this piece were to buy one statement accessory that would then carry you through all of the things. So whether it's like one bag or one pair of shoes, make sure you can kind of continue to rewear the same thing so you're not spending a fortune accessorizing and also having to think and faff with all the different bits involved. And also the high street. I mean, I know it's really lovely to have a pair of Louboutins or Manolos or something for your wedding, but God, M&S shoes are comfy and Baker do great heels. And actually really to kind of think outside the box, and it doesn't have to be the most expensive or special pair because you might not even wear them
again. No one sees them on your wedding day, do they? They're so hidden.
Exactly. No. Well, unless you've got a short little number.
Oh, yeah.
Wait and see. I'm joking. My wedding dress is not short. But the second one will be. Anyway, I think that's it for this week. If you enjoyed that, please do rate, review, subscribe, and tell your friends. And we'll see you next time.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more.
One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about UnitedHealthcare insurance plans at uh1.com.